You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Okay, like I was telling you a little bit earlier, you know, sometimes it's a lot of fun hanging around the council and doing a bunch of the projects and doing things like stock assessments and getting in the water and talking to fishermen. But then a couple times a year, they get together and have these meetings. And so what's coming up right now, the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council, 130th meeting. And that's in a period of about 40 years. So they meet about three times a year, more or less. And this particular one is happening, for those of you that are on the Big Island, in the beautiful Nanilo Hotel in Hilo. And it's been a while, and it's nice to get going back there. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Maloy Saboteur is here. We're going to be talking to him, part of the science stuff that he does. And of course, Josh DeMello. We're going to talk to Josh about what you really need to know about these meetings. I know, Josh, a lot of times when we have the Fishers Forum, it's obvious. We get together and get people's opinions. But there's an awful lot of things that are going to go on in this meeting that individuals that might be just regular fishermen listening to the show, they may not know how important they are in the big picture. But doesn't just about everything that's happening affect all of us in some way?
So these meetings are really about the science that's going on in fishing. And these are some of the top guns in fishery science in the Pacific. And they're going to be talking about the science behind some of the things like annual catch limits and discussing how it'll affect both the natural science and the social science behind all of these fishery issues.
Yeah, obviously, there's a couple of things. We've come to grips and we've talked. Last week, we were talking to Eric Kingma about a similar thing, and that was we've had this huge growth in the population in the western area, but we haven't had a huge growth jump in the growth of fish, because maybe it's even less than it used to be. So somewhere in the middle is where this science meets the road, right? Where the decisions get made that affect everybody listening.
Right. So when the council meets, they usually take into account the science, the socioeconomics, the cultural stuff. And then this one, they're really looking at what science recommendations they can make to the council to say this issue has good science or the science is not good and you should only use this science.
Yeah, but this is not all about rulemaking and penalties and closing and opening, right? This is more of what science has been able to gather since the last time they met that might aid them, give them tools to plan the future with.
Right. So this meeting at this point, they're not really talking about rules. They may discuss it, but they'll discuss it in terms of the science.
Okay, so some of the people, let's go to Maloy Saboteur. Marlo, what sort of stuff is going to go on in your end and some of these other people that Josh mentioned? Guys like, Jim Lynch and Brett Shoemaker and you and Michael Park and others.
All right, so at this meeting, we're going to be discussing several agenda items. And the first of which is that the Science Center is going to come up with a new stock assessment for the territory bottom fish. It's different from our deep seven bottom fish fishery. Their fishery is more, there's a shallow water component and a deep water component. The shallow water component is made up of mostly reef fish species, snappers, groupers, emperors, and jacks.
But
and,
a lot of those are not found inshore in the main Hawaiian Islands. I mean, they're there, but not with the same numbers that you're talking about from other parts of the Pacific.
Right, right. And this their bottom fish fishery is different compared to the ones here in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. They use the same bottom fishing gear. They're even using some wooden reels. But they target mostly shallow water reef fish using the same kind of gear. And if there's a demand for deep water snappers, then they go after the deep snappers.
It's interesting to me that some of the reef fish that you're talking about are pretty big there.
Yes,
in size.
Yeah, definitely. And there are certain areas of the reefs around the Marianas as well as American Samoa that still have this large fish. So they're going to come up with a stock assessment next year, and we're reviewing the terms of reference for the review and assign an SSC person to be the chair.
If you put your science hat on for a minute, let's talk about that for a minute. Let's say that some of these islands still have some inshore large fish. Would that be indicative of them taking less, or the population of the fish doing so well that it can keep up with growth? Or has the growth been not as significant in there as it is in like the main Hawaiian Islands?
It can be both. Mm-hmm. One thing that we noticed in the island territories is that the amount of fishing effort for the commercial fisheries, for example, has been going down over the years.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any idea on what the trends are for the non-commercial fisheries,
yeah.
But definitely the commercial fisheries are showing a decline, and not a lot of people are engaging in commercial fishing anymore. Particularly
yeah.
because the socioeconomics doesn't add up.
Mm-hmm.
It costs
yeah.
more to hire a fisherman to go out
yeah.
and provide fish for your store mm-hmm. rather than importing the fish from elsewhere.
See, and Josh, when we talked about this in other times, it's like, all right, let's say that a village was able to feed itself, and then its cost or the gear or whatever, it got more and more prohibitive, or it got harder to find the fish. Now you're likely to start eating fish out of a can, or fish caught somewhere else by these large, you know, net trawlers and different species, but protein is protein and price is price.
Exactly, and when you have these deep water bottom fish that go for $15 a pound in
yeah.
Hawaii, $20
yeah.
sometimes, you know, even more. And then you go to places like American Samoa where yeah. you can get the same species of fish,
yeah.
but it's like $3
a
pound.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
so how do these guys actually make money? Because
mm-hmm.
those folks that are buying it aren't making enough money to splurge on even $3 a pound for
mm-hmm.
fish.
Yeah, yeah.
So those fishermen aren't making it a lot of money if they are selling it. So like Malloy said, they're actually just going out and targeting certain fish for the markets because the markets know what will sell.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. And I guess, Malloy, one would say if you're a capitalist, you think, all right, how can I get in on this? In other words, if it's $15 a pound off Oahu and it's $3 a pound off in Samoa, let's go down to Samoa and buy those fish and bring them up here.
Right, and that's something that the council has always been looking at, is how to get access to those territory bottom fish.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is really logistic. I mean, there's not a lot of flights coming out of the territories
yeah, yeah.
going connecting, you know, American Samoa, for example,
mm-hmm.
to Hawaii. Only have like flights two to three times a week.
And you can't. It's not as though you can put, you know, 40 tons of fish on that flight.
Exactly, because it's filled with
yeah, with
baggage.
People and people. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it still is pretty interesting, because I do know that, particularly in some respects, Josh, that people would say, wait a minute, this isn't a problem, this is an opportunity. But I guess a lot of the roads have been looked at, and it isn't an opportunity if you don't have lift or planes or ships or something. And then if you talk about ships, it's not fresh anymore.
You got to have the infrastructure in place as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So places like CNMI, the governor is really supportive of fishing development
mm-hmm.
and trying to build up their fisheries and looking at boats and trying to develop their markets because of the new tourism from the Chinese visitors that are coming in to their casino and everything. But really, you're limited by your markets
mm-hmm.
and then you're limited by your infrastructure on where
yeah.
boats can go out to fish, and then you're limited on where those fish go.
Where are some of the places that people have heard us talk in previous shows that they will give up a certain of their tuna for investment in their infrastructure for inshore fishing, or for like things like boat ramps or ice houses, which like we see they're everywhere, but in some places that you're talking about, it's hard to find a boat ramp or an ice house.
Right. So in CNMI is probably the best example, because they used the money that they got from the Hawaii Longline Association for their quota to build things like the boat ramp and
yeah,
parking areas
exactly.
for their fishermen,
yeah.
and they're looking at buying a vessel with that money to do some exploratory fishing and see if they can actually catch the fish and sell it to the markets and ship it out to Hawaii if they can.
You know, I think that's why, Malloy, when we get a chance to talk to you about the scientific end of it, that at last, I think, you can correct me if I'm wrong, it's my hope anyway, that the fact gathering and the analytics that you do now are more acceptable to the fishermen, based on they can see that the way you gather your information is not just strictly look underwater, but talk to the families and talk to each area, how much fish comes up each time of the year, and maybe they're willing to accept a little bit more of what you do.
Exactly. And the key thing about doing the right science is knowing the local information
mm-hmm.
and talking to fishermen. as well as doing good monitoring of the fisheries, allows us to understand the trends in the data that we use for stock assessments. And one of the things that we would be discussing at this SSC meeting in Hilo is the annual catch limits, for example. The SSC, our scientific committee, is in charge of specifying acceptable biological catch, which mm-hmm. is a certain level of harvest in which the fishery is known to be healthy. If you catch above that, you're encroaching to maybe the more detrimental side of the mm-hmm. population. But if you keep your catches below that harvest level, you will ensure that the stock is healthy and the fishery is sustainable.
Have we experienced the fishermen's willingness to either limit their species catching or their time catching based on if you take them, they're going to be gone and your kid won't be able to work on your boat because there won't be anything for him to catch?
That kind of understanding is starting to become more and more prevalent to most of our fishing communities, and they start to understand that, you know, if you limit the effort, then you allow the population to grow for adult fish to spawn their eggs and produce baby fish, and over time that will accumulate. One example is the territory bottom fish again, mm-hmm. in which when they did the stock assessment in 2015. The CNMI, using CNMI as an example, is that it generated a harvest level at 226,000 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And the average catch for CNMI is only somewhere around 40,000 pounds. That's like 20%.
And that actually is encouraging in many respects. But by the same token, sometimes it takes these studies for the science a little bit longer to take place to catch up and be of value. I've noticed in some of the stuff that's going to be at these meetings, the gathering was right now. In other words, they're looking at yesterday, not 6 years ago when you compile your stats.
Right. So the council monitors the fishery, determine whether the fishery is responding to the different management measures, and the council is also involved in a lot of improvements in the fishery data collection. So at the council meeting, the fishery data collection and research committee will also meet, which is the body of the council that deals with data collection.
You know, I think, Josh, maybe a lot of people that listen to the show don't fish in more than one milieu. In other words, they're a reef fisherman or a shore caster or a troller. And so the guys that are on the inside, they often say to me, hey, you know what, when you guys talk to the council, is it always about offshore? Well, in many respects it is, because of the geography that the council is looking after, right? But the cooperation between, say, the DLNR in the main Hawaiian Islands and the council is interesting. What about in the rest of the places, in CNMI and places like that? Is it similar that there is a group controlling the inshore fishery and then the council is the outshore fishery again?
Yeah, so each island area has its own fisheries agency. Mm-hmm. But it's not really just fisheries, but CNMI has a division of fish and wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
Guam has the division of aquatic and wildlife resources, and American Samoa has Department of Marine and Wildlife Resources.
So it's similar, but not exactly.
Right. Yeah. So it's similar. They're similar to the division of aquatic resources here in Hawaii. And one of the things that's important to know about that jurisdictional boundary is that the fish don't know where 3 miles is.
Yeah. We talk about that a lot. That's really true.
So, the council really is managing, trying mm-hmm. to get into that ecosystem-based mm-hmm. management, where what happens on the inshore affects mm-hmm. what happens on the outside of 3 miles, and it's all one ecosystem, same ahupua type of mentality.
But what about the actual Maloi? Look at the geographic situation, because I know that you a lot of the time look at the infrastructure and how the inshore environment is being affected by fishing and development and all of that stuff. Is that are all of these islands similar to the Hawaiian Islands in respect to depth and where you get shallow water out so far and then deep water? Or are there some significant differences?
It's almost similar. Although Hawaii may have a larger shallow water reef areas, mm. but in the territories, most of their shallow reef areas end within within the 3 mile boundary, and it immediately drops off to great
depth. Yeah, to zero. I mean, the only way that we get this, Josh, is if you go to the Big Island.
Right. So you know, off of Kona, where it goes like a mile deep, right off of shore.
It's like 30 feet here, 30 miles right there.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah, so a lot of those places in Guam and Sina Mai, especially. Right off the shore is deep water. Sina Mai has a lagoon area. Guam has some areas, but a lot of the areas, if you go right outside the harbor, it's already super deep.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I can tell you from experience in places like Chuuk and Palau and Pohnpei and stuff. You know, you got this huge area inside, right? The shallow waters, the atoll, and the reef. The minute you get outside the reef, the water's black. It's so deep, you know, and there's huge fish. Right then and there, which makes it a lot different from us, right? We're going to go out and catch big fish. We're going to go 7 to 10 miles out.
Right. Yeah. And so one of the things out there is you can go pretty much right off the cliff and go fishing. So like where everyone goes fishing off of over here, off of the Hawaii Kai side outside of Sandy Beach area.
Sure.
Those kind of cliffs are a lot of the areas in Guam and Saipan.
Yeah, and the way it's treacherous, but anyway, I think that getting more involved in this, and one of the things that I was asking about when you talk about the insular fishery, for people who don't know what that is, what is that?
The insular fisheries is anything that's not pelagic, basically. So you got the coral reef fisheries, bottom fish, crustaceans, and precious corals. So we manage, regardless on whether it's within or outside 3 nautical miles, the council manages, or at least part of their consideration when they make their management decision is the, we have to manage it on the full range of the stock. So that would include the shallow habitats.
But you know, the people that fish inshore in other places other than Hawaii, they're not likely to get a lot of the pelagics if they're really in close. But for some areas, like we talked about, where there's deep right away, Josh says the reef fish, they certainly don't know geography, but they're not likely to want to enjoy the deep water. But what about the pelagic, Josh, when they are literally right outside the inshore fishery? What about their transversing into shallower water and looking around, especially to eat?
Well, some of the problems are we don't know as much as we should know about some of those fisheries. And some of those pelagic fish, where do they go to breed? Where do the small ones end up? I mean, we see them outside of the buoys all the time, but where are they if the buoys aren't there?
Yeah, exactly. Well, the other one is somebody said after a different show that we did, when we talk about, say, like surf areas, and a couple of months ago there was a lot of sharks outside the leeward side because I guess the mullet or the hullaloo or the akuli or opelo or whatever were in the surf. So guys out surfing, we're seeing sharks because the sharks are not dumb. They're hungry. They're going to come in and eat.
Right. And we've been experiencing more and more predators, orcas and great whites large predators. And so where are the other fish going? Are they going either further out or are they coming in closer? Climate change may play a role on where these fish are going to go. If it's a little bit cooler or a little bit warmer, it'll change their behavior as well.
That's pretty interesting. You know, a couple of weeks ago, Malloy, we were talking about the observers and the longline boats getting out into to the loggerheads and leathernecks and the turtles and whatnot. There are places, aren't there, that the eating of turtles is still very, very much a big part of their diet?
Yes, probably somewhere in the Micronesia area. Yeah. But, definitely if you're in the U.S. jurisdiction, that's not allowed.
Yeah, it's just not allowed. It's not to say that it doesn't happen. But it certainly doesn't happen on the scale that it used to. Okay, so the insular fisheries, I guess if this meeting was held in CNMI or in Guam or American Samoa, it would be highly attended because most of them are in that fishery.
Right, and there's a lot of in the territories. You know, depending on where you are, American Samoa, for example, has a huge pelagic component because of their American Samoa longline fishery. In Guam and CNMI, for their pelagics, they're mostly targeting skipjacks.
Sure.
And but they also have a huge insular fisheries component, particularly reef fish and not to some extent bottom fish.
Well, you know, we know from experience, and I guess, Josh, if you go down to the auction, the amount of skipjack that comes in is small, only because it doesn't travel very well. So the longline boats, they don't want to catch it because they're not freezing it, right? However, isn't that, Malloy, an extremely important part of the diet in the areas you're talking about? That skipjack goes from the ocean to the plate that same day.
Right, the bonita is what they call it in the Marianas, and that's one of the major landings they have. That's a huge component of their commercial fishery is the bonita, and it goes straight from the boat all the way to the to the fish market.
It doesn't take long either, does it?
It doesn't take long. Yeah, people like those fish.
Yeah, there's another thing too. Somebody asked me by email. And by the way, you can always email me, themikebuckshow@gmail.com. And all of this stuff that we're talking about, if you want to learn more about these meetings and where they are and even how to participate and give your input, you can go to wpcouncil.org and look at the upcoming events and upcoming meetings and bite off all you want to do on that one. I think there's another one that came up. And this other guy asked me, Josh, I don't know if it's you or if we're going to defer this to Malloy, but what about Cava Cava? A lot of people love Cava Cava. And it's certainly not as prolific for some reason, but it is a tuna. It is dark, oily meat that a lot of local people love. Are they also included in the stock assessments?
I'm not sure if they.
I've never seen it, in a line item.
A lot of these pelagic species have stock assessments done by the Secretariat for the Pacific Community, out of Noumea, and so I don't think it has been done yet. Mm-hmm. I can check on that, but it's probably not as high on the list because it's not the big money fish that big eye, bluefin.
Yeah, you wonder if it could be. I mean, for instance, I do know the same thing would be, is anybody taking a look at like rainbow runners? Where are they? And they're certainly great to eat, but you don't find them in huge big numbers anywhere.
And you don't catch them that often.
Yeah, exactly. Same as Cava Cava. I mean, you catch them, but I don't know people that say, hey, let's go catch some Cava Cava. If you get them, you get them. But it's hard to find out even where they are.
Yeah, so sometimes we don't know because there's not a lot of studies that are being done because it's also not listed as a management unit species. It's also not a highly targeted species. Yeah. And so you have to draw attention to the to the species in order for research to be conducted on them.
What about this? And a lot of people sort of differentiate what they're going to eat and what they're going to buy beside about what size pan does it fit in. I mean, you talk a lot of panfish, which are more harder and harder to find in the markets, right? Because of the effort of catching them and the cigatera and all of the other things that come into play. You don't see these small fish anymore. Are they counted? Are they looked at?
Everything is looked at. Mm-hmm. If you're a commercial fisherman or if you're in the territories, for example, all of the catch that you have is subject to a survey, or you have to report them in your fisher's report. So all of them are counted, and certain markets may have some preference towards different kinds of species of fish and even sizes of fish.
Well, they do, and I think it depends on the neighborhood they're in. I mean, there's certain people that like to eat little tiny, they'll eat, coli coli if they have to. It doesn't matter. And they actually like that. But is that the same thing, Josh? I mean, what's happening is the council is turned out to be all things to all people. It's not just, 2,000-pound marlin that we're looking at. We're looking at pan-fried fish, too. Maybe not in the same breath, but we're certainly looking at it.
So I think you talked with some of our people a few months ago about the life history project that we're doing, looking at the life history, the otoliths and gonads of different reef fish,
and it's brought some surprising results, hasn't it?
So far they've been getting enough samples for length and weight, but really you're really missing the really small ones and the really big ones. When you go fishing, you're not going to catch the really small ones or the really big ones. So we get like the middle sized ones, the legal size, and so we're going to have to start focusing on some of that effort of going and trying to get the smaller ones and the bigger ones.
Okay, now there's a whole other group that are going to be discussed at these meetings, and these are either threatened or endangered species. And I do know that in some places that there are some of those. How do they fit into the picture outside of having people sort of agree, okay, well, at least in this area, we know that group of fish is really, really challenged, and we can't catch them anymore, or we got to do something?
Well, protected species is a completely different animal in itself because you know, they're managed under Endangered Species mm-hmm. Act or Marine Mammal Protection Act. But we, as a council, we are mandated to look evaluate our fishery management decisions based on the fishery as well as how it interacts or conserve the protected species. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to take that into consideration when the council makes its management decision.
Okay, well, wait. Josh said a while ago, and I agree, and you agree, that the fish don't know where they are. They don't know if they're in the 2 mile and the 20 mile limit. But by the same token, does a fish that's an endangered species that's in the middle of a bunch of fish that I'm catching, that I don't know that it's an endangered species either. And I'm catching Mampachi, and all of a sudden I pull up an endangered species. What do I do?
There are certain set of rules yeah. that apply if you're interacting with a protected species. Mm-hmm. So I'm not well versed to those rules, but it's covered by several federal rules.
And by the way, also maybe we should point out, Josh, in this meeting, in the first group, is that there is nobody out trying to impact somebody's ability to catch fish or to eat fish or to sell fish. But it we do have to agree on that certain parts of the fisheries are challenged.
So I think it's always been the council's prerogative to make sure that we're still able to fish. Mm-hmm. And so as part of this meeting, the Scientific and Statistical Committee meeting, they're really looking at the science just to show that we can still fish. But sometimes you can't. The science mm-hmm. says that maybe you shouldn't be fishing so hard. So we have to take that into account as well, because in the long run, we want to be able to fish forever, and we don't want to end up in a situation where the science is telling us we shouldn't be fishing at all.
But these are the meetings that those groups are able to come forward and state their opinions and their cases and call to attention, maybe from, like Malloy was talking about a while ago, anecdotally, the information you gather from the people on the beach in an area where you're doing that study, that input is more valuable than a lot of other things, because these are people that are there every day and see the changes.
And so this meeting is being held in Hilo, mm-hmm. which we hardly ever go to Hilo. I mean, it's been a while since we've been in Hilo having meetings. So this is an opportunity for the Hilo folks to come over to the meeting and provide their perspective, especially for things like mm-hmm. Kona crab, deep water mm-hmm. shrimp, sure. the uku that we're going to be talking about, and also some of the pelagic issues, especially with a place like Suisan there that takes a lot of their tunas and sell it. So we really want to be able to provide that opportunity for them to provide input and their opinions. But the other part is that this one is really the science meeting. So if you have any scientific information that or observations that you've done or that maybe it doesn't jive with what you've been seeing on the water, this is a good time to talk to those scientists.
Yeah. Now, are there times, Malloy, that somebody will take and do a study like you guys do, a stock assessment or whatever, and then change your opinion based on input, local input, when they come in and say, okay, we read this report, we question these three things. Maybe they're bigger than you guys thought they were or smaller.
The process that we take to get, input from the public with regards to the science is through the Scientific and Statistical Committee meeting, as well as our the thing that I mentioned earlier, the review of the stock assessment. So mm-hmm. that's a public meeting as well. So one would be held again for the territory bottom fish. And, the recent Kona crab stock assessment that was reviewed last month, we had a couple of Kona crab fishermen attended that meeting, and they provided very important insights to the reviewers, and they took those comments and turned it into a scientific recommendation for the Science Center to look at.
Yeah, see, that's really cool. I mean, that's kind of the hope that there would be for the inner workings of a lot of this. If people want to know more about this portion, and by the way, the guys will be back next week with part two of this discussion. Because it's an ongoing thing. I do know that you can go to wpcouncil.org and decide on it. Josh, some of these things are obviously committees and closed meetings of some of the management and some of the scientists, but I do know that almost all of these meetings have a way that people can either do comments or present notes or present a paper, if they will.
Right. So if you want to be on the agenda, you can always email us info.wpcouncil@noaa.gov or just call us up, talk to Malloy. He's in charge of this SSC meeting. If you want to provide comments or suggestions, or just comment on the things, come down to the meeting, or you can email us again, info.wpcouncil@noaa.gov.
Yeah, and by the way, Malloy, when you say he's putting you in charge of it, it must be gratifying to know that people actually care. I mean, you know that a lot of what you guys do is tedium and maybe it, at times even almost to the point of why are we even doing this because it doesn't get used. I'm thinking that more and more of it is getting used. You mentioned effort before, when somebody comes forth with effort. They're not going to do effort in something that seems like it's not going to return for them, right? I mean, fishermen are pretty smart when it comes time to where are we going to fish, what are we going to catch, how much are we going to make for it.
Right. So, you know, the fishery already knows how to operate, and they already know how to catch the fish. And, you know, most of the time the fisherman doesn't know the nuances of the fishery. Thus input from the public would be very, very helpful, because you know, the decline in fishing effort, for example, could be explained, you know, by a local fisherman who's experiencing difficulty in going out to catch the fish.
Do you expect that there's going to be some concern about some of the bottom fishing areas that have been closed off? And where people are saying, well, if the stock assessment is showing that they're in pretty good shape, how come we don't get, when can we go back there and catch some fish?
Well, the stock assessment is on a broad scale. It covers the full range of the stock. So the main Hawaiian island deep seven bottom fish, for example, it covers the whole main Hawaiian islands. And you know, the closed areas are specific areas across the main Hawaiian island chain. You know, assessments are being done on a broad scale to give you an idea of the overall health of the stock. Now, whether that information aligns with the need for conserving individual fish on a very small scale, that needs to be discussed. And
it's pretty interesting, though, that your data, and I think that Josh, you and I talked about this a long time ago. The information, the science that's going into the gathering. Is now you can actually put cameras down there and take a look. Oh, and without, if you put a diver in the water, fish scatter. If you put a camera in the water, after a while, they just swim by it. Hasn't this been a great addition to showing people that the data is good data?
Yeah, so it's always good to be able to show the public, the fishermen, that what they're seeing is what's actually happening.
Yeah.
And camera work can do it. If it's done correctly, sometimes it's not what the fishermen see, but at least they know that maybe what they're seeing is not actually what's happening deeper down.
Yeah, and that's interesting. Real quickly, before we run out of time this week, and by the way, the guys are going to be back next week because this was too big to do in one get-together. We're going to be back again next week and continue this. I think that sometimes... Malloy, when we talk about before, once again, I'm coming inshore because, you know, you have experience in both areas. When you have a lot of runoff, a lot of rains, like the big floods that we've had on Kauai and on Oahu, doesn't that actually really affect the fishery in that immediate vicinity, like a reef that gets covered with mud and who knows how long it's going to be before it's out of there?
Right, and those impacts needs to be considered as well on how that relates directly to the... to the fishery. And you know, the council has always been a proponent of ecosystem based fisheries management, and there hasn't been a lot of studies that points to, you know, this indirect effects, as we call it. You know, the runoff will degrade the habitat will have an effect on the productivity of the area, therefore the population of fish would either increase or decrease. We need to have more of those kinds of study in order for us to understand how the ecosystem dynamics work and how that would translate to fisheries.
But what I think is interesting, even though the council's Kuleana is not that inshore area, the inshore area becomes the outshore area sometimes a lot quicker. And even though you're talking about miles off, that's just a arbitrary number, right? Because let's say it's 3 miles or whatever, it's 3 miles, right? So what if it's for a mile? It's shallow, And then all of a sudden, for the next 2 miles, it's really deep. So all of the pelagics that we're taking care of at the consul, they're coming in.
Right.
They're only 1 mile away. So that's a whole big area that we haven't talked about.
Right. And, you know, that it's really important that, you know, the council, the federal National Marine Fisheries Service, yeah, and the state or the territory agencies to work together in terms of managing these stocks, because, like Josh said, they don't recognize political boundaries or jurisdictional boundaries. So whatever happens inshore also gets affects offshore and vice versa.
Okay, so we're going to wrap up today because we run out of time. But next week, we're going to talk some more about that and more. And more importantly, you know, it's time for you to go to WPCouncil.org and check it out for yourself. And the reason for that is not just the gathering technology that's improved, but so too is the rapid time in which this information gets processed and then presented. So it's pretty valuable. And like I said, if you want to know more about this, you go to WPCouncil.org. Okay, WPCouncil.org. So for everybody, for Malloy and Josh, I'm Mike Buck. Thanks for being here. See you next time. Meanwhile, go catch some fish and enjoy them.